Right. Hi. Welcome to my talk, Simplifying KubeRed, New Tools for Easier VM Management. Let me introduce myself first. So I'm Felix Matuszek.
The microphone is not on.
It's not on, the microphone.
It's not for us.
It's only for camera.
It's only for camera. Here there are no speakers, so he needs to actually work with his voice.
All right, so I'm Felix Matuszek, senior software engineer at Red Hat, and I'm working on KubeRed, including its command line utility and Ansible bindings, and also on other parts of KubeRed. So let's have a look at today's agenda. First, I want to give you a short introduction to KubeRed. Then we'll have a look at KubeRed CLI and enhancements to it in the latest development cycle. Then I want to show you how you can automate the VM lifecycle with Ansible. And after that, I'll try to give you a demo of everything. And lastly, I'll show you some next steps for the topics we've discussed. So first, what is KubeRed? It's a way to run and manage VMs on Kubernetes. So KubeRed might be an opportunity for companies wanting to get to know Kubernetes that already have VMs and are interested in container workloads. And all you can do with traditional VMs, you can do with KubeRed VMs as well. But KubeRed brings VMs into the container world. So you can make use of Kubernetes features such as services and others as well. So Kubernetes has to offer something on top of traditional VMs. And not only that, but it also allows you to combine virtualized and containerized workloads. So for example, you could run like an existing virtualized application on your VM and combine it with a new containerized microservice. And for all of this, KubeRed extends Kubernetes with several VM-related custom resource definitions and provides agents and controllers to actually provide the business logic required to run the virtual machines. And under the hood, it's using Liberate and QEMU to run one QEMU process per container, which contains the VM. And here, just like for a quick look, that's how KubeRed virtual machine CRD would look like. I'm not going into the details, but like only for rough context, this is like a minimal VM that would be bootable. And later, we'll move in that space in the spec, so I'll show you this here quickly. Next, I wanted to give you a reminder about a topic I've given a talk about in the past, which is instance types and preferences. And this topic will become a bit more important later in this talk. And so these are custom resource definitions combining resource sizing or runtime preferences. Runtime preferences are like settings your virtualized OS would expect from the virtual machine, like shaping the hardware of a virtual machine, essentially. And one of each of the instance types and preferences can be referenced by a virtual machine. And later, they will be applied to the actual like virtual machine instance that's then derived from the virtual machine. And by now, KubeRed ships predefined instance types and preferences. So we ship preferences for common OSs like Ubuntu, RHEL, CentOS, etc. So you can start right off the box and run your VMs on KubeRed. And keep in mind, it's just a different approach to creating VMs, so the full custom customizability is still there if you use the full definition of a virtual machine. But in most cases, this makes life easier. So let's have a look at KubeRed CLI, which is called WirtCTL. It's a tool with several features. So first, it allows you to control the lifecycle of virtual machines. That would be things like starting, stopping, restarting your virtual machine. But it also allows you to create VMs, instance types and preferences. And for that, it provides a fixed set of flags on the CLI to adjust the parameters of the objects you can create with it. So in case of a VM, for example, you could specify the name, the boot volume that's going to be used, or the instance type and preference the VM should use. And all of that is then outputted into a manifest, which I think it's quite nice because it allows for quite nice one-liners, creating objects directly on your cluster if you'd like to. But if you choose to, you could also save this manifest into a file. You can then customize it further or choose to deploy your VM with a GitOps approach or something like that. And also, it provides other quality of life features. I would say most noteworthy is the remote access to SSH, SAP, and VNC. What's nice about it is that you only need the configuration file for your cluster control plane, so you'd only need access to your cluster API, and then you can essentially use port forwarding to access these services on your virtual machine. So you can then SSH into a virtual machine or copy files to it or access the screen of the virtual machine. And there were several enhancements to WirtCDL in the 1.4 development cycle of Kubert. So WirtCDL Create VM gained several new features. The first feature would be the generation of cloud init configurations. Before that, it was only possible to specify a base64 encoded string on the command line, which contained the cloud init configuration, which is not very user-friendly, I'd say, but was there. The second feature is the injection of credentials through the Access Credentials API we have in Kubert. Third feature is support for sysprep volumes, so you could now bootstrap your Windows guests on Kubert as well. And then there were many more cleanups and fixes applied to WirtCDL. I would say most noteworthy is the unified volume import. And for that, the UX for importing volumes to the command line was streamlined, so it's easier now to import volumes, for example, let's say from HTTP or a registry. Now I want to have a closer look at the first feature here, the generation of cloud init configurations. Essentially what it does is it allows you to log in the user VM right after creating it. There's no more need to like compose basic configurations of cloud init yourself. And I have an example here. So this would be the WirtCDL create VM command. And I'll give it the user flag because I want my VM to have a user called my user. And I wanted to have an SSH key, which is, in this case, read from a file in your home directory. It's a feature of the shell, but I think it's quite nice because it allows you to read from a file. And then below, there's an excerpt of the virtual machine that was created. And under its volumes, a volume containing the generated cloud init configuration was added. And in this cloud init configuration, the SSH key is statically injected. So I abbreviated here the key, but you get the point. And might look simple, but in my mind, makes life amazingly easy because especially in dev environments where you need to create a lot of VMs and throw them away again, you now can create them with a one-liner, and at least for my work, it makes life a lot easier. And you could try this yourself, but keep in mind there's no boot volume in this case. So if you wanted to try it, like keep in mind you need to add a boot volume for it to actually work. And then I have the second feature here, which is the injection of credentials. So on the slide before, we statically injected an SSH public key. And this time now we're injecting it dynamically, which means we're using the Access Credentials API to read a public key or a password or multiple passwords from a secret. And I have an example command again. Again, the user flag for my user. And then this time I'm using the Access Cred flag, which would take multiple parameters. In this case, I'm using only a single one, which is the source parameter. It tells the tool to use the secret called MyKeys to source the keys from. And below, then there's another excerpt of a virtual machine that was created. And we see that in its access credentials, an SSH public key was added. And it's using the QEMU guest agent method to propagate the public keys into the virtual machine. So the guest agent is responsible for writing the authorized keys file of a user. And this works dynamically. So it sources the keys from a secret called MyKeys in this case. And if we change the secret while the VM is running, the guest agent will update the keys in the running virtual machine. And what's great about this feature is, I would say, is that It allows you to store your secrets separately from your virtual machine definition. So yeah, say it's best practice to keep your secrets somewhere safe, not in your virtual machine definitions. Now we've seen WirtCTL, which works well at a small to medium scale, but let's see how we can manage VMs at a larger scale. For that, I wanted to show you how we can automate the VM lifecycle with Ansible. I hope you all know Ansible. It's a ubiquitous tool to automate IT tasks. And Kubert now provides its own Ansible collection, which is called Kubert Core. And this collection provides lean bindings that support the most common tasks for Kubert VMs. It also allows you to reuse existing tooling and approaches. So it makes virtual machines, Kubert virtual machines, available to Ansible as any other host for Ansible. And this allows you to use reuse existing content like roles or playbooks if you have them. So yeah. Also, because Kubert VMs are now a regular host to Ansible, you can use it to manage like day two activities at scale as you would with your like other hosts as well. So you can now easily apply a configuration change or update your fleet of VMs or stuff like that. And you can get this from Ansible Galaxy today. And it's also shipped by default in the Ansible distribution. I think we're starting with version 9 or something. Let's have a closer look at the contents of the collection. So first, we have some modules. First, the Kubert VM module, which allows you to create, update, or delete VMs. It's kept lean intentionally, but it still allows you to support to change most of the parameters found on a VM. So we've seen earlier the definition of the VM, and there's a template spec inside, and you could still choose to modify it with the VM module if you'd like to. And also it allows you to wait for changes to be propagated. So let's say you're starting, stopping a VM, or changing a configuration parameter, then in a regular Ansible playbook, you would expect that if your task is finished, that the changes are applied. But for VMs, changes are not like, they're not applied instantly. It takes some time. So by default, it's running asynchronously. But you can choose to wait for the change to be propagated, so the next step in your playbook then can build on top of your previous change. Then we have the Kubert VM and VMI info modules. Those allow you to look up VMs on a cluster if you don't know which VMs are on a cluster. It supports filters like label or field selector, so you could also filter by namespaces. And if you already know which VM you would like to get more information about, that's possible too. And these modules are read-only, so you cannot change anything about it or about your VM with them. So it's safe to run them against a running virtual machine. You cannot like harm your application if there's something running inside that machine. And next is my favorite part of the collection, which is the inventory plugin. This inventory plugin allows you to populate your inventory dynamically from data on a live cluster. So this runs against the cluster. It discovers the virtual machines on the cluster. And then it also allows Ansible to connect to these machines by discovering SSH connectivity to the VM, essentially. So it tries to find a suitable Ansible host and Ansible port combination. And there's a certain predecessor to that. So you could specify a network name on your virtual machine, and then it would like it would try to find the interface of that virtual machine you specified. And I meant the IP address of that interface. If not, then it tries to find services exposing the SSH of your virtual machine. So if you have a load balancer or a node port service exposing the SSH of the virtual machine, it would try to connect to them. And if not, then it falls back to the first interface on your virtual machine, which usually is the pod network. So if you run Ansible in the same cluster as your virtual machine, or at least on the same same pod network, then it would still be able to connect to those VMs. And the plugin is designed to handle like large-scale environments. So you can do all the usual stuff you can do with other inventory plugins as well. So you can group and filter by cluster name, namespaces, labels. It supports keyed groups, composed variables, all the stuff. And of course, you can also use it like with tools like AWX. So that makes it really useful in these cases. Okay, so I wanted to give you a demo about all of this now. Wanted to make this demo focused on folks running Kubernetes and liking to give Kubert a try. And the aim is to show you like a complete scenario of all I've shown you before. So we want to include the CLI and Ansible. And I'll show you also how you can get a running cluster and connect Ansible to it. And I want to try it live. If not, then we can fall back to the slides. So just let me move this over. So, first, let's create a. Sorry, I missed a step. I wanted to show you how to create a cluster, but I'll show you later. So first, I have a running cluster already. I have vo.ctl, and I want to create an instance type and a preference with that. So first, let's run vo.ctl create instance type. We pass it a name, an amount of vCPUs, and an amount of memory. It already exists because I tried before, so excuse that. But we can have a look at the manifest which would have been created. So we see it has two vCPUs and 2 GB of memory, as we specified. And then I want to create a preference. I already did this before, so I'll just show you how the manifest looks like. So I specify that it should have a CPU topology, of course. So the default would have been sockets, but I want to assign my vCPUs to cores. And you see that the preferred CPU topology is cores. And next, I'll create the VM with Ansible. And for that, I have a playbook, which I'm running now in the background. Well, I'll explain to you what it does. So this uses the Kubert VM module to create the VM on the cluster. Then it applies the instance type and the preference we just created. I have secondary network support on my cluster, so I can connect to the VM on a layer 2 level. So it attaches a secondary network to that VM. And lastly, it injects an SSH key statically so we can connect to it. And this is a bit up to the Wi-Fi now, so maybe it works, maybe it doesn't. It did. So we have a running VM on the cluster now. And next step would be to run the inventory against the cluster. And for that, I have an inventory configuration, which is quite small. It's using the inventory plugin provided by the Kubert Core Collection. We wanted to look at the default namespace. And we tell it to use a network name called Bridge Network. That's the secondary network I just added to that virtual machine. And if I run Ansible inventory with this configuration and tell it to list the inventory, essentially, this is running against the live cluster, and that's the virtual machine which is running on the cluster. So if I scroll up here, there's the virtual machine, so test VM. And we see that there's also an Ansible host, which is the IP address of the virtual machine in the secondary network. And now I'll run a playbook against this machine deploying HTTPD. And we see we want to accept that. So this is deploying HTTPD on the virtual machine now. So we have like an example application. And what's important here is that we need to point Ansible playbook at the inventory. We need to give it a user and the private key we just injected so it can connect. And this is now up to the Wi-Fi again, so I hope it works. If not, we can go back to the slides for a second. Because Yeah, because I told you I would show you how you can create a cluster and actually connect to it, so Ansible to it. So yeah, I forgot about that part. For this, we're using the actually the test environment of the Kubert core collection. So this would be step three in the slide here. That's using Docker or Podman to spin up a cluster. And thanks to Podman or Docker, we easily get support for a secondary network. You can run all of this yourself. I'll upload the slides to the FOSDEM page, and it should all work. So you could just copy and paste it, and it should hopefully work. If not, you can contact me. I'm happy to help. So please try it yourself. And I just see that the playbook was applied successfully to the VM. So I want to show you actually that it works. Yeah, if my VM is working, then yeah, it is. So the IP address of the virtual machine was this here. And if we go there, we see actually the HTTPD is running on the virtual machine. So it worked. The Wi-Fi was, yeah, was nice to me. So now the slides are completely broken, but that's fine. Yeah, can't show you the slides anymore, but yeah. Anyway, I just wanted to conclude what we did in the demo. So we successfully created a cluster with the test setup of Kubert Core. We connected Ansible to it with the inventory plugin, and we created a VM on that cluster, and we successfully deployed an application on that cluster. And lastly, I have some next steps, which also I'd like to show you, but I'm not sure. Yeah, okay. Some few more next steps. So in the future, we wanted to make WordCDL more easier to extend, because right now there's still some boilerplate code involved in it. We need to address some usability issues in Kubert Core. So there's still some issues if you run it against a cluster and the VM is modified in the same moment, and there can be item potency issues with Kubert Core. And lastly, we want to carefully add new features to the collection. One big feature would be the support for fact caching. And lastly, we need your feedback. We need to know from you what you would like to see in the collection in the future. And that's it. So thank you. Any questions? Yeah?
Kubert, how will it support that the public cloud providers like Amazon, Azure, and Google?
If I understood correctly, the question is Kubert supported on public clouds as AWS?
Without using OPC.
Actually, you can just deploy it on a regular Kubernetes cluster. You can run this cluster yourself, or you can use a managed cluster. This works. For it to work optimal, you would need bare metal nodes. But you can choose to run nested virtualization. But it's dangerous territory. It can work, but it can cause issues. But in general, it works. You can deploy it on a cluster, on a public cloud.
And is it also supported by the vendors like Microsoft and Amazon, or?
The question was if it is supported by vendors of the clouds.
Microsoft, Amazon, Google.
Yeah, if you run it yourself, then it's not supported. It's your own application, but there are offerings based on Kubert, okay. So you
so
can find them in some clouds. Any more questions? And that's it. Thanks.